This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or a degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's a beautiful weekend across most of the country, and I hope it's nice where you are. And you have an opportunity to spend an hour or two with us to listen to information about health. We call the information that comes to us via multiple sources, stuff that I learn about via my practice working with patients at the Hoffman Center here in New York City, as well as the latest dispatches from medical journals and from articles across the spectrum of media that talks about health. 888-302-3684 is our number. We've got lots of time to take your questions. We invite you to come into the doctor's office and share your views about nutrition, or perhaps you've got a medical enigma that you want to get solved. So call us at 888-302-3684. Got plenty of stories to cover today, so stay with us. And, of course, the big story today, and it's all over the media, if you put on cable news, it's a constant drumbeat. The death of Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali dying at the age of 74 of the long-term consequences of Parkinson's disease. He succumbed to a respiratory ailment. You could say the old man's friend, pneumonia, often is the way that people die of natural causes of old age. But 74 is a little bit of an abbreviated lifespan. But Muhammad Ali was afflicted with Parkinson's disease for at least three decades. And he was really very, very significant to my generation, the baby boomer generation, because we grew up with him as a hero, as an inspiring fighter, and also as an extremely engaging personality. There was none like him in terms of his swagger and defiance. And also in the social arena, he made a big impact because it was the era of the Vietnam War, and he didn't want to fight. And that inspired an entire generation to take up arms against the establishment and push back with demonstrations and civil disobedience against the Vietnam War. And I actually had an encounter with Muhammad Ali. It wasn't a one-to-one conversation, but I was changing planes in O'Hare Airport, and this must have been at least 25 years ago, and through the terminal walked a hulking figure with a kind of a shuffling, staggering gait, and he was big. I remarked on his size, and he had an entourage around him of women dressed in modest Muslim garb, and it was unmistakably Muhammad Ali. He was walking across the terminal, apparently to catch his plane connection, and at the time, it was unmistakable that he was deeply affected with a movement disorder. And so let's take a look at this from a medical standpoint. I did a little research on this, and actually one of the best articles on this subject appeared April 11th, 1983, in Sports Illustrated. Okay, that's 33 years ago. It's an article entitled, "Too Many Punches, Too Little Concern." And it specifically talks about Muhammad Ali and other fighters who are suffering from what has been termed dementia pugilistica. These days, we might call it CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which was popularized in a recent movie called Concussion with Will Smith. Go see it. It's about football players. It's got a really important message about chronic trauma to the head. And boxing is a cruel sport because you get banged in the head routinely. And Muhammad Ali was quoted in December of 1981 announcing his withdrawal from boxing after a 21-year career. He was 41, and he had boxed since, you know, clearly his early teens. Appeared in the Olympics, I think, around the age of 20. So he had a 21-year serious boxing career. He said, quote, "I don't want to be one of them old retired fighters with a hat nose saying, duh, 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 before a fight." And those were, unfortunately, prescient words for Muhammad Ali. In the article, they say that boxing injury has received inadequate public attention. Chronic brain damage occurs when a fighter is hit in the head thousands of times during the course of a career. Boxer's encephalopathy is the scientific term. The colloquial expression is punch drunk. And they talk about how Muhammad Ali was recently, this is 1983, interviewed on national TV. He was seated in front of a fireplace at his home in Los Angeles. He did not speak particularly clearly, and he seemed distant and grim. Asked whether he might have suffered brain damage from his 61 fights and 21 years in the ring, he replied softly, "It's possible." To many observers, the interview seemed to substantiate rumors within boxing that the 41-year-old Ali, who has been slurring his words more noticeably and acting depressed of late, was indeed becoming punch drunk. In a subsequent telephone interview, Ali declined a request by Sports Illustrated that he undergo neurological testing to set the record straight. He said he'd been tested before his last two fights in 1980 and 1981 had been found normal. But some of those fights, if you remember the latter part of his career, the question was, is he really fit enough to fight? And he pushed himself to engage in a few final bouts where, if we go back retrospectively, we look at some of the exam records where he might actually not have been qualified to get in the ring because he was already showing signs of chronic traumatic brain damage. So the history of this, 1928, a Dr. Harrison Maitland, a New Jersey pathologist, delivered a landmark paper at the New York Academy of Medicine, and he introduced the term punch drunk. He said the signs were well recognized by fans and promoters. Early symptoms usually appeared as a slight unsteadiness in gait, some cases periods of slight mental confusion. In more advanced cases, there was a general slowing down in muscular movement. Quote, "a peculiar mental attitude characterized by hesitancy in speech, tremors of the hands and nodding movements of the head." The facial characteristics of the Parkinson's syndrome, backward swaying of the body, tremors, and marked mental deterioration. Martland estimated that almost 50% of veteran professional boxers had the condition in either severe or mild forms. And then in 1973, a Dr. Corsellis, a neuropathologist, performed autopsies in the brains of 15 former fighters who died of natural causes, and they found a striking pattern of cerebral atrophy or brain shrinkage in 14 of the 15. In the 70s, we take it for granted that we have CAT scans and MRIs, but it was only in the 1970s that CAT scans got invented. And using this then new technology, a researcher named Kasson said that he has seen examples of something called cavum septum pellucidum, which is an abnormality deep within the brain in a part of the brain called the cerebellum, which regulates muscular coordination and balance. It's a characteristic CAT scan finding in many boxers. And so when they did a CAT scan in July of 1981, on Muhammad Ali, 5 months before Ali's final fight with Trevor Burbick, if you remember, it was a TKO with Burbick winning. In the radiologist's written report, there was brain shrinkage, enlargement of the ventricles, hollowing out of the brain tissue, and the finding of septum, cavum septum pellucidum, which is a characteristic finding of dementia pugilistica. And as far back as 1976 in this article, they report that Dr. Ferdy Pacheco, he's a general practitioner who has known Ali since 1962, warned him that he should retire from the ring to avoid brain and kidney damage. In 1977, Pacheco quit working Ali's corner in protest. Pacheco says he took some mammoth beatings. There were the fights with Frazier, Foreman, and Norton, to say nothing of all the sparring with Larry Holmes and Michael Doakes, who were no ordinary sparring partners. They became heavyweight champions of the world. But Ali was the one who wanted to stay on stage. The only role he knew was being champion. And as a result, he pushed himself to continue fighting, possibly ultimately guaranteeing that he would have chronic brain damage, which is progressive. Once it occurs, the inflammation progresses until one has progressive disability, difficulty speaking, walking, and ultimately thinking. And so today we mourn the passage of a boxing great, a great human being, an inspiration to an entire generation, Muhammad Ali, whose medical history, in retrospect, is kind of tragic. He survived more than 30 years with a serious disability. But finally, unlike many intrepid heavyweight opponents, this disease finally brought him down. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is Intelligent Medicine. We invite your phone calls, 888-302-3684.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor here, president of the Texas Organic Research Center. As you probably know, it's a toxic world out there, but we can do something about it. Become knowledgeable consumers and use products that are safe and healthy, such as natural supplements that help protect the body's cells from toxic exposure. One of my favorites is Reg Active with ME3, the only probiotic proven to actually produce glutathione in the body. It's the body's master antioxidant, unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals and exposure to environmental toxins. Glutathione decreases as we age. Reg Active is great for rebuilding it, and I strongly recommend it.
Look for Reg Active at Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold. Revolutionary. Remarkable. Reg Active.
If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I have some exciting news about a new effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation. Zona Plus is the real deal. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 in free shipping. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you, and their number, 888-302-3684. If you want to get in with your questions. And let's take a call now from Jill in Middletown, New York. How are you?
How are you, doctor? I have a question. I get these ads all the time about supplements, and this one is called Revitrin, which is nanocrystalline cellulose.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you had ever heard of it or if you know anything about it.
So how did this come to you? You're just like a mailbox stuffer kind of thing?
Yes, I'm constantly getting them.
Well, you know, why you constantly get them probably is because you buy supplements.
Yes, and that's it.
So once you buy supplements, again, these mailing lists and blah, 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 you know, it's we don't do that, you know, at drhoffman.com. But, you know, ultimately you're going to get bombarded with pitches. So through the miracle of the internet, let me see, I'm going to look this up, revtrin.com, and what is it? You know, right away I go to the ingredients list, and Revitrin contains something called NCC, nanocrystalline cellulose. Now, we know a thing or two about cellulose. It's like one of the most common materials on the planet. It's basically sawdust, wood, paper. You know, they're all cellulose. It's basically the material that makes up plant walls. And while it is a form of fiber, I'm not sure how beneficial it is for health. But what they say is that this is a special form of cellulose. It's nanocrystalline cellulose, which they claim, and I can't verify this, because I never heard of this before, and I haven't seen scientific papers on this. And, you know, it says NCC contains a high level of antioxidants that can be absorbed by cells. Okay. So the actual supplement contains a proprietary blend where they don't actually tell you how much of the different things are in it, which I kind of don't like. I like things spelled out for me. So it contains...
Well, they have numbers after this. Like, I don't know what it means.
No, there's only one. There's only one number. It says 500 milligrams of a proprietary blend. And mixed in with that proprietary blend is some nanocrystalline cellulose, some foti root. Now, foti is a plant source, an alternative source, rather than grapes, of resveratrol. So polygonum is, yeah, okay. Then there's something called Drinaria rhizome. I don't even know what that is. It's some kind of traditional Chinese thing. And then there's pine bark extract. I don't know what that is. That's like pycnogenol. We don't know how much is in there. And then there's a little bit of L-theanine. Again, we don't know how much is in there. So let's look, you know, and I'm just going by their, I have no outside validation of this, but they say the science, under the science, I'm not entirely satisfied with their science. Because when I look at a claim on science, I want to see papers. So it says, NCC went through exhaustive lab animal and human testing from the most respected independent research facilities worldwide. But then I don't see that. I see the reference to one article, and I'm not even sure that that article says what they say it says. So, you know, I could do a little more research on this, maybe report back to you on it, but I think it's, you know, it's just one among many supplements that purports to be a spectacular antioxidant that may or may not be valid. Okay?
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for your information.
Okay. Thank you very much. Catching me a little bit on the fly here, but it's a new thing, and we have to delve a little deeper into it before we can say authoritatively whether it works or not. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. We got more coming up on Intelligent Medicine.
Do you know there is a silent killer living among us? High blood pressure. It affects nearly 1 in 3 Americans and is a primary risk factor for stroke and heart attack. The CDC estimates that almost 20% of those with high blood pressure don't even know they have it. That's not surprising, since high blood pressure or hypertension is often symptomless. Research studies have shown that a daily dose of aged garlic extract can safely and effectively help to reduce blood pressure, as well as benefiting a number of other cardiovascular risk factors. And the most researched and highly respected aged garlic extract is all-natural Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. Odorless and organically grown, Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract has been clinically tested to support blood pressure and cardiovascular health. So, along with getting your blood pressure checked regularly, get Kyolic Formula 109 for blood pressure and cardiovascular support today. Available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. 888-302-3684 is our number. And you're welcome to call us. But, hey, say maybe you can't call us or you don't care to get on the air with thousands of people listening live. And perhaps you've got a question. You can email us your question to radioprogram@AOL.com. We will answer it during our weekly podcast, our Q&A with Layla podcast, that wherein we answer lots of your questions that you can email us via radioprogram@AOL.com. All right, stem cells in the news. And they offer great hope to cure many diseases, diseases that are now thought to be hopeless because they involve organ destruction or degeneration, spinal injuries, Alzheimer's disease, liver failure, heart failure, any number of diseases where it's a matter of old cells dying. Stem cells offer the prospect that new cells can be placed within the body and may then regenerate tired or damaged organs. And there are a lot of people out there purveying stem cells. There's some offshore places. You can go to China and you can get stem cells for, you know, whatever horrendous malady you might have as a last hope that that might cure it. Although there's been a lot of problems associated with these offshore facilities. But you can get stem cells also in the United States. There's a thriving enterprise of stem cell clinics in the United States who, by various means, have achieved clearance to have stem cells removed, possibly from your abdominal fat, or in some cases from your bone marrow. They're then spun down in a centrifuge, and then they're reinjected into your body. And the hope is that they will find their way to the diseased organ or the damaged organ and regenerate it. And stem cell researchers, the ones who are the leading researchers, the ones at major universities, medical schools, and National Institutes of Health, kind of think that they're jumping the gun. They deplore these clinics because they believe that the clinics are not using the most up-to-date technology. The NIH researchers and medical school researchers in their stem cell research have found it very hard to make stem cells take, to make stem cells actually go to where they're supposed to go and do the job of regenerating tissue. So just to simply inject stem cells into a vein in the arm and say you got Parkinson's disease and you hope to get the Parkinson's disease fixed up, they think it's not ready for prime time. It's premature to offer that type of therapy. Nonetheless, I share with you news of an astounding breakthrough. The Washington Post reports that Stanford researchers studying the effects of stem cells injected directly into the brains. That's the key. It's got to go right where it's supposed to be. Stem cells injected directly into the brains of stroke patients said Thursday that they were, quote, stunned by the extent to which the experimental treatment restored motor function in some of the patients. Very small study, only 18 patients, and it was only a safety study. So it was like a preliminary study. They weren't even yet going to measure the efficacy, but they happened to notice that it was very helpful. And the results appear to contradict a core belief about brain damage, that it is permanent and irreversible. There was real repair and restoration going on here. The results were published in the journal Stroke, and the work involved patients who had passed the critical six-month mark when recoveries generally plateau. There's rarely room for improvement once you've gone 6 months with stroke-related damage. But the therapy involved surgeons drilling a hole into the study participants' skulls and injecting stem cells in several locations around the area damaged by the stroke. This is a very precise technique of neurosurgery. So, yeah, don't try this at home. And it's experimental, and they're not doing it widely. But this may ultimately revolutionize our approach to a very debilitating condition. Strokes paralyze and rob speech from countless individuals every year, and it'd be great if stem cells really worked to help reverse this problem. So far, you know, just shooting them up via a vein in your arm, not likely to create a major difference. Maybe a placebo effect, but the real deal is to put the stem cells where they're needed, right into the brain. All right, let's take a call from Kevin in Westchester, New York. How you doing, Kevin? Hi, Kevin.
Oh, shit.
Kevin, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry about that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Forgive me. Okay, thank you. Quick question. My mother's 82. She had a hip surgery for a fractured hip in January. The doctor said it's not healing that well. My question was, is hip replacement a good idea for someone that age, or should I give it a few more months to try to heal?
So what she has is, I mean, this is actually something I went through myself. I broke a hip, and in terms of the potential for recovery, it depends on the location of the fracture and the person's condition. So I was in great condition. I was a competitive athlete. And fortunately, and this is something that I was even aware of as I lay there, you know, in pain getting a morphine drip, I was really hoping that the fracture was not in the location at the neck of the femur, which is a thin area where blood supply can be compromised by the fracture, and healing is often poor, and you ultimately need a hip replacement. So I guess in your mother's case, they thought, okay, it's not really in such a critical area that they didn't do an immediate hip replacement. They hoped for recovery. But ultimately, it seems like the recovery is hampered. You know, maybe age is a factor, her physical condition, but also it could just be the location. The location is not amenable to healing because it's the blood supply is poor, the bone is already too osteoporotic. So when that happens, you know, a couple things. One, you can use something called bone morphogenetic protein, or BMP. Bone morphogenetic protein is a compound that actually enhances the activity of osteoblasts, which build up bone. And it's available as a supplement called Ostinol. I mean, this is something that I would generally give to someone right at the time of a fracture to help with healing. But, you know, maybe this is several months down the line and maybe too little too late to encourage bone growth. But I would definitely have her try that. You know, other things, we have to check, you know, her vitamin D. It's important to have all the cofactors for bone to be there, the magnesium, the calcium, ipraflavone, manganese, boron. All those are combined in a supplement called OsteoSupport that the new product is called OsteoPreve. Same beginning, osteo, but the ending is PREV. So these are some of the things that you might consider. I just don't know the situation. It might be too little too late for her to achieve recovery. There might be some obstacle to recovery that I'm not aware of. But those are some of the things that she can use to enhance her potential for recovery. She could also use strontium, but strontium, to my mind, strengthens bone, and it's unclear what it does in the setting of a fracture, whether it actually helps to knit a fracture. It's more likely that you get fracture healing with a supplement called Ostinol, O-S-T-I-N-O-L. And that's something I would recommend for someone who has a break and wants it to heal better or faster. A lot of people are going to experience a break. That's something to think of as you go forward. I wish I'd known about it at the time I broke. It wasn't even available at the time I broke my hip, but fortunately it healed well with the nutrients I applied. Thank you very much for your call. 888-302-3684 is our number. And walnuts are in the news. We know walnuts and other nuts have heart benefits. They may reduce the risk of metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance. Here's a new way that walnuts may improve your health. Eating walnuts changes the gut microbiome and reduces cancer growth. And I'm happy to read about this because the way I eat salads, I make a salad with a bunch of ingredients, maybe some lettuce, maybe some endives, tomatoes or beets, sliced peppers, onions, lots and lots of ingredients, palm hearts I like, artichoke hearts, and then I top it off with some crushed walnuts, maybe just like a handful of crushed walnuts, which gives it flavor and texture and crunch. So University of Connecticut reports that eating walnuts may change gut bacteria in a way that suppresses colon cancer. A team of researchers found that mice that ate 7 to 10% of their total calories as walnuts. Wow. So let's see, how would you do that as a human? Well, if you eat, say, 2,000 calories, you'd have to have 200 calories of walnuts. Well, I guess it's doable. That's not that much. Maybe more than a handful. The effect was dramatic. The mice had 2.3 times fewer tumors when fed walnuts while being fed a diet similar to a typical American's diet. I guess if you want a mouse to get, mice don't usually get colon cancer. But if you feed them a typical American diet, they will get colon cancer. So it turns out that walnuts have the most polyunsaturated fatty acids of all the commonly eaten tree nuts, as well as the highest ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acids and a high level of a form of vitamin E with anti-cancer properties. That would probably be gamma-tocopherol. So the other aspect to walnuts is that they're a great source of the right kind of fiber that favorably influences the microbiome, the mix of bacteria that inhabit your intestinal tract. So walnuts taste good, can't lose. Think walnuts for colon cancer prevention. And I'm going to try and remember that for my patients who have had intestinal polyps or have had a brush with colon cancer. Going forward, they should consume walnuts. 888-302-3684. We encourage your phone calls. We've got more to share with you when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the intelligent medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Another celebrity death, this one last month, the death of Prince under circumstances that were clouded by possibilities that he was addicted to pain medication, that he'd overdosed. And it turns out those suspicions were confirmed by autopsy results that take weeks to come in, but they found high levels of the synthetic opiate fentanyl in his system. Fentanyl, which is a chemical analog of morphine, but it's 50 times more powerful. And there is lots of fentanyl abuse in this country. And there's also a lot of innocent victims of overzealous pain prescribing in America. And a new study suggests that many patients continue using opioids months after joint replacement. And you shouldn't really require opioids, powerful pain meds. I mean, you might have a little pain or a little soreness after you've had your hip replaced or your knee replaced. But to be taking these heavy-duty meds, I mean, yeah, maybe for, right around the time of surgery for a couple of days or a week. But the unfortunate fact, according to a new study from the International Association for the Study of Pain, about 30% of patients undergoing knee or hip replacement were taking opioids prior to their joint replacement surgery. That ain't good. They were in a lot of pain. And of this group, 53% of knee replacement patients and 35% of hip replacement patients were still taking opioids at six months after surgery. So what that suggests is that the surgery alleviated their pain. It should. Most successful surgery does. But it did not reduce their dependency on pain medication. They were hooked. And they were even more hooked after the surgery, which probably increased their pain quotient temporarily, but may have made it possible for them to require more medications long term. And this is possibly what happened to Prince. Prince was an amazing performer. If you see, like, videos of his incredible gymnastics on the stage, wearing high heels and just doing the splits, he injured himself repeatedly. And the autopsy result also shows signs of previous surgery to sites in his body, which was battered by the demands of these rigorous performances. And possibly, just possibly, he's a celebrity. So he gets access to, quote, the best medical care. Lots of doctors who were happy to prescribe to a celebrity. And maybe, just maybe, that perpetuated an addiction to pain meds, which ultimately resulted in his overdose. For a terrible tragedy, because died at a very young age. Fabulous performer. All right, this item. Hot flashes. Some women can't or won't take bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. There are reasons not to. Say you've had breast cancer, you've had ovarian cancer, or maybe you're concerned about risk. You've got a strong family history, or you've had abnormal mammograms. You just don't want to go there. So you're suffering from hot flashes. They can be relieved by hormone replacement therapy. What else can you do? Think acupuncture. According to a new study, acupuncture was found to relieve hot flashes and night sweats by 36%. Now, this might not work for every woman, but hey, it's worth a try. And you might say, well, great, I go to the acupuncturist and I get relief for 6 hours. And once they take the needles out, the hot flashes come back. The answer is no, that's not the way it worked. The research showed that the symptoms can be relieved for up to a year after a course of acupuncture. The women taking part were allowed up to 20 treatments within 6 months, provided by licensed, experienced acupuncturists, and they kept a diary. And it was found that after 6 months, there was an average of 37% decline in the frequency of hot flashes. After 12 months, the benefits persisted. There was still about a 30% reduction in hot flashes and night sweats compared with the start of the study. So that's pretty cool, suggesting that acupuncture can be beneficial, and it's official because it's published in the medical journal Menopause. Okay, this item has to do with natural ways of dealing with attention deficit disorder, a subject that I tackled in a book around 15 or 20 years ago. I wrote a little book about natural therapy for attention deficit disorder. And indeed, it's been confirmed in a recent study that natural approaches, simple lifestyle approaches, may have a very beneficial effect on patients suffering from attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Children with ADHD are often treated with Adderall or Ritalin, but a new study suggests that parents can also help their kids by promoting healthy lifestyle habits. They looked at 184 children with ADHD, 184 and 104 without. They compared them, and they simply adhered to healthy behavior guidelines recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the National Sleep Foundation, and the USDA. The guidelines were no more than 1 or 2 hours of total screen time a day on TV, computers, or video games, at least 1 hour of physical activity, limited intake of sugar-sweetened beverages, that's important, getting 9 to 11 hours of sleep a night, and drinking 7 to 10 cups of water daily. And what they found was there was, a significant reduction in the need for medication, improved behaviors, and it really worked. So, yes, natural lifestyle approaches are an important adjunct to treatment of ADHD. So often medication not required, or kids are overdrugged in the U.S. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay with us. We've got another hour for many of you. You can listen via podcast. This is Intelligent Medicine.